All right, we're here for another episode of Inside Out. Today, we're fortunate to have Metra Tech in the house. Mm-hmm. David, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is David Blair. I'm the Director of Product Architecture at Metra Tech, and we're a company that does charging, billing, settlement, and customer care. If it's sort of worth level setting a little bit for people to understand what that really means. Simplest way to think about charging is it's all about the process of transforming a stream of events for a service provider into a stream of money. So it's essentially you translate it, use Regpoint's data, and you get to dollars and cents. Billing is the process of collecting those kinds of information, all that charges, getting it on invoices, getting it out the door. It's sort of the sort of reporting piece of the picture. Okay. Settlement in our world is really talking about distributing cost or revenue among a set of third parties. So you can think of wholesale relationships and reseller relationships as examples where the revenue that might come in the door has to be distributed among the person sold the product, kind of a commissioning model, or something like that. And customer care is pretty much what you think it is. It's really a subset, though, of CRM. It's important. We're not in the place of doing CTI integrations or anything like that. We're really focused on the billing-specific semantics of that, which are managing subscriptions and managing the contracts, the terms under which people receive service. So, filling out the picture of full CRM in our mind is something where we'll partner with a group like Dynamics and create the whole enterprise architecture. But that's really not our space.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's all about data.
One of the other important aspects of understanding the billing space is that historically, some of the problem domains have been defined by a very large scale of data. Just metrics to wrap your brain around it is if you're in a telecommunications environment, any given person's making 10 phone calls a day over the period of a month, you're looking at 300 usage events. Start looking at those numbers on millions, tens of millions of customers, and these are large, tens of terabytes data databases, and scale is absolutely one of the critical or non-functional components of creating a billing system.
Interesting. Now, of course, you're a partner of Microsoft, which is why you're on the Inside Out show.
Yep. We
are actually a customer of yours.
That is correct.
That's an interesting relationship. So, what do you do for us? I
mean, well, in fact, it's rather interesting that Microsoft has been a customer of Metra Tech for many, many years, going back to a full 6 or 7 years. There was a company called Placeware that was a Metra Tech customer in the web conferencing space. That was an acquisition of Microsoft and became Office Live Meeting. And so we've actually been producing bills for Microsoft for 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
But most recently, we are have been working with Microsoft for about a year now, and we're doing all of the billing for the Business Online Services Group. So hosted Exchange, SharePoint Online, these are all things that are being billed through the Metra Tech engine.
Interesting. So essentially, this is pay-for-play, pay-for-services, software as a service. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, software as a service or software plus services, depending on your branding.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And the basic business models will be broadening as Microsoft rolls out more of their software as a service businesses. But today, essentially, it's a combination of subscription-based businesses, things like per-seat charges, which are analogous to what we've been doing for years with the Office Live Meeting Group, paying per mailbox per month, things like that. But moving forward, we'll be doing a lot of the usage-based billing, which brings the scale problem back into the picture.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk a little bit about the technology here. Take us through the architecture of your solution. I want to know about the pieces of the puzzle.
Yep. So, if you will, one thing to note about Metra Tech that's particularly interesting is we're distinguished among many of the people who play in the telco space by being based on the Microsoft stack. We have, since day one of 10 years ago, been using from the Windows Server platform, SQL, COM and DNA architecture back in the day, and now .NET and many of the technologies layered on top of that.
Okay.
So one of the key value propositions of, there's several pillars, if you will, of the value proposition of Metra Tech, but they boil down to A, dealing with a lot of complexity, B, dealing with a combination of time to market, agility, and business enablement. So we like to be able to reflect the business models that we see. And the third piece is that we want to be able to do this very efficiently. And that means cost effectiveness and time to market. Hmm. So to sort of reflect that back onto the discussion of the platform, really, if you get right down to it, the decision to be on the Microsoft platform, which is something that was made many years ago, was the decision to use this platform, A, because it's going to have the best TCO in the industry, B, because it's going to have the most integrated set of underlying server technologies, the way the built-in middleware functionalities that exist in the platform, and B, the best tooling. And really, the tooling is a huge part of it. Developer productivity is a really big piece of what makes us successful at what we're doing.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you can get a lot of things done more quickly without having to program COM.
Which is powerful
and sort of beautiful in its own right, but it requires a certain level of sophistication and problem solving.
I think that there's some key things missing in the COM model level, the things that you can do via reflection and having first-class objects and having first-class classes, essentially, in the .NET world makes a huge difference for us, because a big part of how we achieve the flexibility in our platform is through creative use of metadata and more broadly metaprogramming. Hmm. There's a lot of people who try and create flexible platforms, if you will, by creating a stack of APIs or something like that. And in our world, we recognize that there's a lot of, essentially what in the services world today would be called tight coupling that occurs in the object-oriented API world. Mm-hmm. And we quickly realized very early on that the way to modify behavior in the system was going to require rethinking of the way components are structured and components integrate in the system. So, if you will, one of the key architectural tenets is data model and things like that in our system are all driven by metadata. The system, in some sense, is a platform where you can perform a limited amount of data modeling to reflect your business into the system. So what does an account look like? How do the accounts associate with other and hierarchies? And being able to use the .NET platform, for example, to code generate those data structures and then use reflection to create metaprogramming constructs on top of them create both an efficient and extensible environment.
Excellent.
The other sort of piece that I think is really important is synergistic with some of the things that are also going on here at Microsoft is that as I mentioned, the issue of the tight coupling of object of some of the object-oriented techniques for extending systems, and the way I think that you can think about that is that if you go back to the old world of people talking about objects in the Smalltalk world, people talked about messaging between objects.
Yes.
So this is really some level when one object talks to another, it's sending a message. And mm-hmm. if you think about that, the real problem with object-oriented programming, the complexity of the object-oriented programming in many cases, is the fact that this is a point-to-point messaging architecture. Object A wants to talk to object B. Object A needs to find object B and communicate with it. And the plumbing that glues all of these things together gets very, very complicated and is really hard to manage. And to create an extensible system, that plumbing gets in the way. It's spaghetti and you can't unravel it. So this is similar to sort of take an architectural pattern and bring it down. The way we try and address that issue is, if you will, create something like we use patterns that reflect things like an object bus, if you will. So instead of components directly interacting with whether, you want to look for architectural patterns where they can communicate over some kind of a shared space and not have that direct coupling. Hmm. And we have several technologies in our system in which the components reflect this kind of an architecture, as well as having different kinds of metaprogramming constructs that enable them to be integrated together in a nice, loosely coupled way and create a lot of extensibility in the system.
Excellent. I mean, that sound, when you said that, it reminded me sort of what they're doing with service bus.
Well, at some level, the way I think about it, the info bus pattern is a well-established pattern at the enterprise architecture level. Right,
cool.
Exists in BizTalk and things like that. And really, what we're doing is the approach that we've been taking for many, many years is a micro architecture approach. Essentially, you take that pattern and you're applying it a finer grain. I think it's worth remarking that type of thinking is going on within Metro, within Microsoft as well.
Sure.
You can think of the types of things that are being done with Link, for example, mm-hmm. which we're big fans of, as reflecting this pattern as well. If you will, data flow is a good way of not directly coupling things together, not directly plumbing data between things. It simply moves from one place to the other in the sequence of events. The data naturally is propagated between them. So, you know, polymorphic iterators in the sense of Link are a great example of using this kind of technology, and we leverage some similar patterns in our software
at greater scale. Do you actually use Link?
We actually do use Link. Right now, in our current development cycle, we're currently making the change from 3.0 to 3.5. Mm. And so our current product that's, you know, be GA in the next few weeks is based on 3.0, but in the 3.5 space we're going to be using a lot of Link because we're big believers in its ability to create highly reusable code.
Sweet.
And create components that don't exhibit the tight binding of sort of more traditional object-oriented techniques.
Interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about, as we move into the future and you're dealing with highly concurrent systems, I mean, mm-hmm. perhaps you're dealing with lots of transactions. Mm-hmm. Are you using P-Link, or do you write your own sort of parallelization?
Actually, we actually have a big piece of technology that today is being used internally in the system, but will be getting exposed in the future. Thing called Metroflow, which is a sort of uses this concept of an iterator pattern, extends the architectural underpinnings of database query engines, extracts it out of the database, and applies it at the application level. And it really is, again, I use this example of iterators, polymorphic iterators, if you will. And Metroflow is essentially a cluster-enabled component model and runtime that allows you to glue together extended iterator-like components into serious petascale data processing flows.
Nice.
So that's going to be a big big focus.
Now, that was written in what?
C++, actually.
Of course.
Yes, because...
and I only said, of course, because I don't know why I said it, but I was right. No, I do know why I said it. But people, you still... like really what I'm talking about is you still use... you don't just use managed code.
No, to be honest, I will, however, in fairness, say that Metroflow is really the only significant piece of non-managed code that has been written at MetroTech in about 4 years.
Okay.
It is truly it's, you know, the answer to the question of would you write a new data, a high-performance database using a managed code environment? I actually know for a fact there are people who would say absolutely. Mm. Maybe I'm more conservative than that and kept things at the unmanaged code level.
Sure.
But it is true. It's truly the exception. Every other piece of business logic that's been written, or business logic, or even infrastructure. So there's some other infrastructures that have been that we've been working on. Those are all managed. So,
cool. Do you have sort of what's your story as far as on the client side, right?
It's all thin client. It gets back to the question of efficiency. You know, how do you effectively deliver cost effectively deliver software to an enterprise? And you know, I think it's not surprising that no one would like to incur the costs of managing, distributing rich client software broadly throughout the enterprise. So we put a stake in the ground very early on that all the UIs really are going to be pure thin client. So it's all ASP.NET on the back end, controllers. Mm-hmm. And you know, with a lot of the Ajax things that are out there today, you're able to bring a pretty rich client experience to users through the browser itself.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sort of channeling Tim, Dr. Sneath, actually, is what I call him. Mm-hmm. In terms of, is there any thinking around using Silverlight? Because then you get the same sort of programming experience and the CLR.
It's for our thin client apps, most of them, they tend to be more or less forms-based. It's enterprise applications. You're dealing with populating data objects and things like that. So in those particular cases, we don't really see that the move to Silverlight is a compelling one. We talked a lot about the metadata aspects of the product, and If you've got all that metadata, both behavioral metadata in the sense of these integrated component architectures, integrating these component within the context of these component architectures, as well as the structural metadata that defines objects and things like that, the question is, how do you manage all of that information? And the complexity of that's clearly going beyond forms-based UI metaphors, and the context in which we're seriously considering Silverlight going forward is in for the configuration management tool there. That clearly, historically, was a huge challenge for us to try and do that with Thin Client. These days, I think you can achieve anything with JavaScript, but the question is going to be the cost to do it.
Absolutely.
So, so that's really where Silverlight is on our roadmap. It's not really so much a commitment, but it's clearly evaluating the technology for that specific purpose.
And a quote unquote smart client front architecture seems out of the question. But the thing I would ask about.
Yeah, although, again, I think that there are interesting developments going on. The Silverlight technology also has some of the disconnected models and things like that that are attractive.
The
offline caching. That's the new world of, of rich client interactions. It's not necessarily. It's not necessarily going to the point where your method of distribution is passing an MSI around, but you're still able to achieve a lot of that. And we would definitely be, in a development environment type of workflow and metaphor, there's a lot of room for client caching of data. And it's certainly probably room for that type of thing going forward.
Totally. And then the whole data visualization is a big thing.
That's actually, in our world, the BI aspects of what we're doing is relatively thin. It's an area where we need to perform it. Not so much that we need to invest in our own, but we definitely see ourselves as doing integrations in that space. There's definitely a lot of a lot of things in that space where you might be able to get significant benefit out of the rich client. It also it's targeting a smaller user base.
Okay.
Right? I mean, there's one thing to dealing with distributing applications perhaps to the call center, to the sort of the customer care application piece. There's also an online billing function which is actually going out to the unwashed masses of consumers, potentially millions and millions of people. Dealing with Silverlight in a context like that, maybe not. But if you're talking in the BI space, you're in a much more rarefied user group, and you can start to consider using those technologies. And the distribution aspects of it, the reach aspects of it aren't really so much of a concern because of the deep value that you're providing to them.
Sure, and I mean it sounds like the deep value you're providing is happening in the back end in the cloud, right? So. Yeah. What if at Microsoft we love to write code, and so we might want to build a custom interface to interact with the data that you're storing and producing?
Yeah.
And then you have inroads for us to do that. You have APIs.
In terms of the data access stuff, another sort of architectural underpinning of how we go about things is we've been service oriented essentially before the term existed, which is both a blessing and a curse in a certain sense because we developed. We developed XML over HTTP protocols for APIs back in 99, right around the time Dave Weiner was writing XML RPC spec and right around the time that SOAP was first being discussed as an extension of that. So we have for many years had what amounts to a proprietary wire protocol for sending HTTP method invocations XML method invocations over HTTP, and we have not yet completely rid ourselves of those proprietary things. But so exposing data services is something that's been entrenched in the product from day one, and having the ability to ease integrations through the use of services. It's certainly something that's been a benefit to us before anyone was really touting the SOA, the SOA, beating the SOA bandwagon like they are. But it's now something which it's now just taken as a given, and it's goodness for us because we do it. It hasn't caused us any real consternation to be able to do that. So it's always how we built software. It's always built software at the macro, at the appropriate grain.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So I want to just jump a little bit back up to the notion of because on this show we've had partners who have also been competitors, which is also an interesting relationship, and then having partners who we are your partner. I mean, we are your customer.
Right.
And so I just want to dig in a little bit, like what is that relationship like? I mean, on the partner level, you have a problem. For example, here's a great scenario. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to do something with your software. I'm a Microsoft guy, and something's not working right, and it looks like it's a bug. And then you say, well, the bug's actually in your implementation of this over here, man. Mm-hmm. And so that interaction probably can get sort of fixed pretty quickly.
Yeah,
that's my question.
There's a lot of different ways I think to get into that question. I think that the most interesting one essentially has been the level of support that we've been able to get when critical problems come up, and in some sense also architectural direction in terms of some of the things that are very important to us as we're going forward, and you know through the connections that we have in Boss G, we have a very special level of access where, you know, there are occasions where we've been able to get directly to developers and things that just simply won't happen with other people. Mm-hmm. Some of the other technologies in the .NET 3.x stack that we are putting a lot of emphasis and effort into is really the WCF, the Windows Communication Foundations, and the Workflow Foundations. Again, the Workflow Foundations fitting into this model of higher level of abstractions for how to glue components together. Just another instance of a runtime of a model that supports that. And we certainly have had some fun problems in terms of security integration, you know, some of the security and configuration aspects of WCF and load balanced environments and things like that. And we've got an extremely good response from teams that we've been put in touch with. We've had some really good interactions with folks on the WF team as well. Mm-hmm. And looking forward, we've done some pretty interesting things to date based on the .NET 3.0 and 3.5 code bases to integrate WCF and WF into a framework that we call Activity Service, which is the easiest way to think about what it's doing is it's trying to take workflows and expose their events that drive them using web services calls. So what it does is it allows you to integrate, to structure things in a nice high-level way, either as sequential workflows or state-based workflows, but then expose those through a nice remotable API that people can integrate with. And this is actually a pattern that we've used pretty extensively in the Boss G implementation as well. So this is pretty critical stuff for us going forward. It also happens to be something that we knew Microsoft was eventually going to address. It was just too obvious in some sense that these things had to be integrated. So, you know, when .NET 4.0 comes around, sure enough, you know, the Dublin App Server, one of its top three goals is essentially to perform this integration. We had some really good conversations actually with the folks at PDC as they were describing what they were doing, because we were sharing the experiences that we'd had developing our own version of this. And there was some pretty lively exchange between those people where they were actually very very receptive to hearing about our problems, and it was a really useful interchange. So because of this, .NET 4.0 is actually it's going to be something that we're going to be jumping on pretty early, because again, we don't want to support it, you know, having built it knowing it was going to be transitioned onto some other Microsoft technology. We want to make that happen as quickly as possible so that we don't have to support it going forward.
And also, I mean, another thing to mention about that is, as an early adopter, you can help us make sure we do it right.
Yeah.
I mean, you have real world experience.
Yeah. There are times when we have lagged in terms of our adoption of things, but this is one where we're probably going to be very proactive about getting on it.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
So you use SQL Server 2008?
Great point. That's for the upcoming release. We're just finishing up the GA release right now. We're still in SQL 2005, and we'll be moving to SQL 2008 in the next release.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I'm personally a database geek at heart. You heard me talking about iterators and things like that. And
sure.
Those who know will go, yeah, he's a database geek. But I've always been a big fan of SQL Server. And we've had really great experiences with the reliability of it, and as it's grown, the improving scalability characteristics and things like that. One of the things that we haven't really talked about is delivery models for MentorTech as a company. And today we we do on-premises, and mm-hmm. we also do a significant amount of our business by hosting our product. And to some extent, I would say SQL Server makes a particularly big difference for us in that environment because the ease of management and the self-tuning features that actually work very, very well allow us to reduce our OpEx dramatically as a provider of hosted services, and it's worked out really, really well for us. So it's, you know, it's from a, again, going back to tools, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's pretty clear with anyone who's sort of developed using SQL Server versus other database that the tooling around SQL is really, really wonderful as a developer. And, you know, SQL 2005, and then there's some really nice stuff coming out in SQL 2008. I think they're finally getting on top of the runtime, you know, the runtime profiling information with dynamic views and with custom event, some of the eventings things are going to be in SQL 2008, where you can really dig into a session and figure out what's going on internally. So I'm really, really happy to see that they're doing that. So it's been a great platform for us.
Excellent, man. Right. So you're Microsoft through and through. It's
pretty
impressive.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you for your time.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me in. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. And nice good luck.
Thank you very much.
The future.
All right.